In today's episode, we talk to Martin Lasarche, one of the community advocates and developers for OpenSUSE, and we're going to find out all about OpenSUSE version 10.2 right now on Novell Open Audio. Welcome to Novell Open Audio, the podcast that connects the Novell user community with what's going on inside and around the Novell universe. I'm your host, Ted Hager, and we still have no Aaron Quill, but I think he's making a special appearance for our year-end shutdown episodes in just a little bit. So later this week, we're going to do a ZenWorks orchestrator interview, and Aaron should be joining me for that particular interview. All things, fingers crossed, everything else. In the meantime, we've got a couple things really quickly to catch up to, and then we're going to take a look at OpenSUSE version 10.2 with my friend Martin Lasarche, who works out of our Nuremberg offices. The SUSE offices has been with the OpenSUSE project since it was pretty much began, and has been with SUSE for quite a long time. So we're going to find out everything that's new inside of OpenSUSE. Before we do, we are going to take a quick listen to a message from one of our alert listeners who called into our voicemail line and left us a message because he actually saw that a little while back when we were doing an interview, I mentioned some movie that I had been watching with the Pixies in it. This was during one of our News from Support episodes when we talked about pre-boot execution, and I mentioned Pixies the band. And I said there was a movie I watched, so I put a little thing and said, there's a t-shirt in it for the person who actually knows what movie I was talking about. Well, here's Alex Hargrove telling us what he thinks the movie is.
Hey, Ted, it's Alex Hargrove. Just wanted to call and let you guys know that you're doing an awesome job with Novell Open Audio, and these recent tracks about Open Enterprise Server have been excellent as well. And to answer your question about which movie you were referring to, it is Loud, Quiet, Loud, a film about the Pixies. Thanks.
And as a matter of fact, Alex, you're absolutely correct, and you're going to send us an email, hopefully, that will give us a little bit of a heads up of how we can send this shirt to you. I think we might have some of your contact info already, because you've been a fairly active listener with us and interact with us quite a bit. So we thank you for that. Thanks for the compliments on the show, and we're sending off your reward. And we do this quite often on Novell Open Audio. We put little things in different places on the website, in the show, at the end of shows, wherever, that are just little trivia things, sometimes have nothing to do with technology, but more have to do with whatever random things are going on inside my mind, and there's one of them for you. Now, what we want to do is we want to tune in with Martin Lasarche and find out what's going on with OpenSUSE 10.2, what's new in it, what people can expect, any kind of issues that might be involved in it. I'll ask a whole bunch of different questions, and we'll find out what's going on with this new release. Coming at you right now. Joining us on the phone, or rather through the Skype line, is Martin Lasarche, who is the... Martin, what is your exact title in the OpenSUSE project?
Oh, this is hard to say. I'm doing so much stuff in the OpenSUSE project. I try to communicate with the community, doing some stuff on the wiki, also on the build servers. So it's not really easy to say what is really my purpose on the OpenSUSE project.
So, but you do a lot of what people call advocacy or evangelism type stuff for OpenSUSE, correct?
Right. I'm also trying to get the project going on, and we want to try to reach many people as possible. This is also my job, yes.
So let's get into 10.2, because this new release just hit a couple days ago. We want to know what's new in it and everything else. And the first thing that people are going to see, I think, is the name is no longer SUSE Linux. And it's gone from, I guess we had a professional version and a personal version when Novell and SUSE first came together. And then we changed the name when the OpenSUSE project was launched to SUSE Linux. And now we're changing it once again to OpenSUSE. So what's going on with it? What's prompting the change to move it to be called OpenSUSE now?
This is a change because all the users said already OpenSUSE. So they said, I downloaded OpenSUSE 10.0 or something like that, even if it was called SUSE Linux at this time. So we really saw that the most users just already called it OpenSUSE. So we changed to OpenSUSE. And the other thing is so we can differentiate much better between the enterprise products and the consumer products. So the enterprise products are still called SUSE Linux, and the consumer product, the free product, is called OpenSUSE. That's the reason why we changed the name.
So you're just sort of responding to the OpenSUSE community. They're calling it that anyway. Let's just go with it.
Right, and it was a better idea. So we really thought the SUSE Linux 10.1 open source version, we had this also. So OpenSUSE is really good. The project is called OpenSUSE. Why not call the distribution also OpenSUSE?
I noticed that the CDs aren't quite the same as they were in the past. What can you tell me about how that change came about? What's different about the CDs?
Okay, we changed it a little bit. So we have three CDs installations. So when you want just default installation of KDE or GNOME, you just need CD 1 and 3. And we have CD 4 and 5 for additional programs. And what we also have, which is new, we have an add-on CD for languages. So if you have special languages like Hungarian, for example, you can just download CD 6, which is the add-on CD. And without the community, we never could make the add-on CD. This is very important for us. We have so many languages now included, and most of the work was done by the community, which is very nice. And what we also have is a non-free add-on CD, so we have some programs like Acrobat Reader, Replayer, and stuff like this.
Do the non-free software, the things that are the Acrobat or whatever proprietary code we might have to add on to this, do those show up in the install list, though, so you can add them and they'll just prompt you for the CD?
Yeah, you have in your install, you have one checkbox where you can say add installation media, and then you can just pop in the CD and install also the non-free software. This is very important for us. We want a free distribution, but we also want the software included which the user needs. Everybody needs Acrobat Reader or Replayer, so the user wants that. So we have that on an additional CD. When you use CD 1 to 6, you have only free software included, which is very important for some people.
The last thing was a question on the new CD layout. I didn't get to experience the streamlining because I installed both KDE and GNOME on it because I want to see all the changes in both of them and study all of that. But for somebody who's just installing KDE or somebody who's just installing GNOME, this means less switching of CDs then during the install?
Yeah, so I guess we had it also for the last version, but you can be sure if you just want the full desktop installation, you need just 3D CDs. Or you can also download the DVD, of course, if you want.
Right. And Martin, as far as the different places you can download this, you can go to OpenSUSE Wiki, you can find out where all the different mirrors are, and it is on mirrors.kernel.org right now, right?
Yeah, right. But you also have a redirector. When you just go to download.opensuse.org, it will automatically redirect you to the nearest mirror, so it should be not a problem. And if possible, use BitTorrent. So if you have a full connection and you're not restricted in any way, BitTorrent is probably the fastest way to get the images at the moment.
And there are torrent files on those same sites as well available, right?
Right, everything is on download.opensuse.org. So it's pretty easy to find and which distribution you want.
Okay, so let's start getting into some of the technical stuff. And I don't want to call up the ghosts of the past or anything, but since it's in our recent memory, in 10.1 we had, let's call it a minor issue, and that's understatement there. The package management, the packager that we had in 10.1, drove a lot of our community people crazy because it was so bad. And a lot of people moved to Smart Manager and things like that. Tell me what's going on with the package manager. Is that issue, do you feel like it's fixed now? Is it still the same libzypp packager? How's that all working?
Oh, it's working much better now. So the problem you had with 10.1 is we changed it to the package management or the update packager to ZMD, Sandbox Manager. To be honest, we are not aware that it was that bad. So we had a lot of problems with that. So when you compare it to the enterprise product, which came out a few months later, most of the bugs already fixed. And so we continued that, and now the version we have in 10.2 is very, very good, so it works out of the box. But we made also some other changes because the community said to us, say, ZMD is maybe nice for a big enterprise environment. We have so many computers you want to update with the Sandbox management tool, but we don't need that. We don't want to install it. And so we also included a new update service called OpenSUSE Updater, which is pretty the same thing as we had in 10.0 or 10.0. So we just don't need ZMD anymore. If you don't like it, just deinstall ZMD, install the OpenSUSE Updater, and you can receive the OpenSUSE update as before.
Is that a default part of the install? So you have to actually remove that and add the OpenSUSE installer instead?
Yeah, we made it default because for most of the users, it's okay, so they won't get both of it anymore because it's working out of the box. So, but for the old hardcore users who like the old system, just deinstall it, install the SUSE updater, OpenSUSE updater, and everything is working fine as before.
And as far as packages go, when updates come out, for OpenSUSE, how do we do it differently from, say, enterprise products or things like that? Are there service packs for OpenSUSE, or is it just ongoing updates?
No, there are ongoing updates. See, we have a release cycle of nearly 8 months for the OpenSUSE distribution, so it would make no sense to have service packs in between this short time. So we just have ongoing updates, and what you can also do, of course, you can update with the build service patches we have. So if you need a new KDE version, for example, just go to the build service, search for the KDE project, and you'll probably find in 1 or 2 months a newer version we have already included in 10 or 2.
And as a hint for our listeners also, I think it's a good one to tell them, the OpenSUSE wiki, if you search for repositories, you can find a page called Other Installation Repositories, and that one will show where a bunch of those things like the KDE packages are. It'll also tell you where various community people host their various update sites.
So we have a lot of package repositories on the wiki already, for example, the Guru RPM package repository. So if you need programs which are not included in the distribution, just go to the page and you will find a lot of stuff there. And also the build service, of course.
And how do people find out more about the build service as well?
Just go to the build service and see what's possible. We also have, of course, documentation directly in the wiki. So when you seek for the documentation, the first thing you should do is always go to the wiki. Just enter the build service there and you will see, give you an overview, what's possible with the build service, and also how to manage to make your own package.
Now, we haven't had a chance to talk to anybody at SUSE yet about the file system. We changed the default file system for a long time on SUSE Linux. It's been Riser. That's kind of been a tradition of SUSE Linux, and SUSE kind of led a lot of the development on Riser. Now it's changed over to EXT3 in this build, and some people, I'm sure, will have seen some of the unfortunate news about Hans Riser. So his status as a maintainer for the Riser file system, I know, drove a little bit of this. Are there any drawbacks for SUSE Linux for going from Riser file system to EXT3?
No, first thing I have to say is that nothing to do with Hans Riser's personal situation at the moment. So we decided before that, or we had a discussion before that, if it's really worth to maintain Riser at this point any longer. Because we have to switch to Riser 4, and so Riser 3 is the old system. Some people said it's not in good shape, so we decided to switch to EXT3, and no, there are no drawbacks.
So it was a technical decision to move to EXT3?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, it's no other decision besides that.
What was it that originally brought SUSE to starting to use Riser?
It was the only file system with journaling, for example. So we started with Riser, I guess it was 6.3, so nearly 7 years ago, we were the first with Riser file system. And at this time, it was a great file system. No other file system had the feature Riser had. But at the moment, you could compare to JFS, XFS, and XT3. Everybody is journaling at the moment. So it's not a big advantage of Riser anymore.
And journaling is a crash feature so that you can recover the data on the drive much better, correct?
At every time, the file system should know in which state the files are. So there are no open files anymore if you have a crash or something like that. This is the advantage of the journaling we have. So we have Riser, the last version we had on the enterprise products. And for the enterprise products, we have a support cycle, support lifetime of 7 years. So Riser will be supported, of course, in this time.
And for people who are in the OpenSUSE community who are using OpenSUSE, they go to 10.2. Do you recommend if they're just doing an upgrade of their system that they should migrate their data from their Riser disks and redo their Riser disks, or can they keep using Riser?
They can keep using Riser. We don't drop Riser. We just made a switch in the installation. Don't install Riser as a default file system. No, it's XT3. So beside that, you can use Riser if you want. It's not a problem.
So in other words, somebody doesn't have to switch to it. They're not going to get new features, though, on Riser. It's not going to be actively developed that much from here. We're going to be putting more weight behind EXT3. Is that correct?
Right, but also our maintainer said the Riser 3 version is not very well maintained at the moment, and so many people working on the 4 version, but also there it's not really going on, so we need a good stable file system, and for the future we see it's XT3 at the moment.
Okay, now one of your partners in crime over there in Nuremberg is Andreas Jaeger, and he put out an announcement not too long ago about proprietary components being dropped from SUSE Linux. You've already said that there's this extra CD for things like Acrobat Reader, RealPlayer, and things. One of the things I noticed when I installed my ThinkPad was that the drivers for my wireless card were no longer included, and I'm assuming that that's the change. And these were the MAD Wi-Fi drivers for Atheros network cards. I thought that that was actually licensed under a BSD license. So give me an idea of that kind of component and why it's not in there.
As far as I know, with the MetVifi driver, with Atheros drivers, there's something different. It's not only open source software, it's also one part which is closed source. And when you read the GPL, it's not possible to link against this part. So we decided we don't have any non-GPL or non-open source drivers anymore, also for 10.1. So, of course, it's a problem for users when you have a MetVifi or a Theros card, but you can download it directly from the page. So if you go search for MetVifi in Google, for example, they also already have OpenSUSE packages, so this is not a problem. But we just decided not to include it anymore.
Yeah, and I found that you can just go to do that Google search on MetVifi, and I downloaded them, they installed, they worked immediately after that. But it was just a surprise to not see it there. So people should watch for that kind of thing. If they have a component like that that does have a proprietary piece to it, it's not going to be on the media.
Right, but it's not really new if you compare it to 10.1. So we just said our focus is on the free software and we don't want to include it anymore. And the feedback from the kernel team, for example, was very good. They said, yeah, this is the right way. We just want to support open source drivers and the kernel.
Yeah, and hopefully the makers of the card will actually come around and open up those drivers for us at some point. Same with like video cards and things. And speaking of video, we moved up to Xorg or Zorg 7.2 in this, which is like leading edge kind of stuff here. This is the latest version that's just recently come out. I think it came out just a little bit of time before OpenSUSE 10.2 released. What's the what was the impetus behind that? Why did we change to the newest version of Xorg?
It's hard to say because for the user there are not many benefits. The thing is, you have, of course, you have a bug fixed in it, you have some new drivers in it, maybe it's a little bit faster and stuff like that. But the most advantage is for the developer. For the first time, the Xorg system is totally based on modules. So it's much easier to change stuff for the developer, it's much easier to add new features, and that's why we changed.
So it's mostly an architectural thing in the back end to help future benefits for end users. One of the things that just totally drove me crazy is, you know, I had been using SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop, and I made the switch to OpenSUSE. This is on my ThinkPad again, which has an ATI graphics card in it. I found that once I pulled down the ATI drivers, they installed, and I could build the RPM and everything else. And then when I tried to run the video configuration tool, the SAX tool, it would just crap out on me. It wouldn't actually give me the screen. I couldn't configure the video. Finally, I had to go and look it up online and found out they don't support Xorg 7.2. NVIDIA's there, but I got to have my 3D acceleration. I got to have my desktop effects. So what can you tell me on that? Have you had any chance to catch up with ATI and find out what their timetables are or anything?
Yeah, we're working very closely with ATI to release the new drivers working with Xorg 7.2. I cannot promise anything here, but it's looking very, very good here. We're making tests at the moment, and ATI will release the drivers very soon, but I cannot say a date now.
Okay, that's hopeful for me at least to know that they're on it, because there's like a bug on ATI's site right now that I've seen a couple of our OpenSUSE community members get rather hostile with ATI about it, and so it's good to know at least that you guys are working with them.
Now, it's going to change a little bit. When if you compared ATI with other releases, it took a long time until they released the drivers. And now it's looking really, really good. So just wait a little bit and we have the drivers.
So you feel like they're improving on their response time on this kind of stuff?
Yeah, sure. Of course, yeah.
Let's get into the desktop itself. Now that I've gotten through some of the lower-level packages and some of the philosophy there, big updates on KDE in this one. And you're a KDE user, correct?
Yes, of course. I'm German.
Excellent. So what kind of updates are in KDE? What are some of your favorite things that you're seeing as improvements in KDE?
First thing is that we have the new version. It's 3.5.5, I guess, yeah. And there are a lot of new minor updates, and the interface is a little bit different. I guess the most thing most people will see at first is the new start menu. It's called Kickoff, and this is really, really nice.
Now, there were some videos on the web on that early on when I think it was Stefan Kula was working on most of the leadership on that new Kickoff menu, and some people may have gotten to see it. What can you describe to us? What was some of the stuff behind making a new start menu? What was wrong with the old one?
I mean, the old one was the start menu, nothing more. And you just have your program there, and you can click on it. And the new one is totally redesigned. So, for example, when you start the menu, when you click on it, you have all your favorites on the first page. This is what you really need. You just need a set of maybe 8 or 10 programs every day. Of course, you can also go to the next tab and click all the programs through you want. We have a very, very nice integrated Beagle search included there. So it's pretty nice and pretty easy to use.
Yeah, and I saw that search tool, actually, if you when you just open up the kickoff menu and you start typing something in it, you can actually like type FIR and you'll get Firefox and whatever else has FIR in it and things. So you can actually narrow down the menu very quickly so you don't have to burrow all the way down to find Firefox or whatever.
Right, and if you compare it to the old start menu, you can type Firefox in there, but it will only highlight where Firefox is hidden. And so you just type Firefox and it will go directly there. And this is much easier.
You know, I have a complaint right now. I've got a large complaint with you, and it's this. You called it a start menu, and that's so Microsoft.
Yeah, but when I say start menu, everybody understands what a start menu is. When I say KDE menu, everybody said, whoa, what is KDE menu? I don't know that.
Yes, they have desktop dominance, but I end up resenting it that I end up even saying that kind of terminology, you know, because it's even trademarked by them, I believe. Anyway, now, speaking of main menus, let's just call them that, we introduced in the GNOME desktop on SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop 10, which came out July 17th, we had this new menu. The project name is actually Slab, and it's got the favorites on it. It's got the Beagle search integrated as well. A lot of people were saying, how do I get that on my SUSE Linux 10.1? The project went out there into open source and people could do that. But is that included now if you're a GNOME user?
Yeah, this is the same menu now. It's a little bit polished now, but it's the same if you have what you have on SLED. So if you liked it on SLED, you have it now also in GNOME 10.2.
Okay, so whichever desktop you're on now, you have the ability to do favorites, you have the ability to get a Beagle search right out there. All that stuff is integrated. That's great.
Right, yeah.
I have one other question for you, though, and I'm hoping you can do this for us. I'd really like to see, when I was in Nuremberg with Aaron Quill, we did some interviews, and one of the guys we got to talk to was Stefan Kulo. We never released his interview. We wanted to do it as we led up to this, and now I feel like the interview is outdated. Can you help us get a new interview with Stefan so that we can talk to him more about this kickoff menu?
Actually, it was before the weekend. I was in the KDE office, and I talked with the guys, and they said, hey, what's up with Ted? Where's our interview?
Well, that's what happened. So
they would love to make a new interview, of course.
Okay, good. We got all clogged up here. We had all kinds of releases happen since then. And I feel very bad that I never got Stefan's interview out there because he's done such great work with KDE. And I'd really love to be able to talk to him and highlight some of the things that he's been doing there. If you can help us with that, we'd really appreciate it. Now,
sure, we'll talk, guys.
Now, let's talk about some other stuff. Laptop users who might be carrying around their machine, using it on planes or using it while they're offline and stuff. I understand that there's new power management features. There's the PM-Utils package inside this. What differences does that bring?
Hopefully the user will not recognize this new backend. So the user just have the small icon in the taskbar and just click on PowerSafe or whatever, and it will work. So the reason for switching to PM-Utils was it seems this will be the future of power management at all. So also other distribution are using this, and we want to use the standard. We don't use something on our own, but we made by our own. So PM-Utils is the way to go, and we are using it now. It looks very, very good, and has some new features like better power management, support for Intel-Core Duo 2 chipsets, for example. So everything is included, and that's why we switched to the new power management system.
Do we get some better efficiencies or anything also through kernel improvements or anything else in OpenSUSE 10.2?
Depends on the chipset, of course, but yes. For example, if you had an Intel-Core Duo 2, you had not really a good mileage before that. And with the new tool, it's much, much better. And with the new kernel, of course.
Okay, great. We actually got to talk to T-Mobile. That was one of the interviews we put out there. And when I'm saying T-Mobile, it's not T-Mobile, the phone company, but T-Mobile at SUSE Labs. We got to talk to those guys, and they told us a lot about some of the improvements there as well. So there's some other stuff people can check out through the podcast. What about the synchronization stuff? I guess there's this thing in KDE called Kitchen Sync, and it hooks into OpenSync in the back end. What kind of features can people find on that? What kind of phones are supported?
The new Kitchen Sync is so much better. It's totally different. It's much easier. You now can see what you're doing, and you don't have to read documentation to synchronize your mobile phone, for example. And this is only possible because we had also much work on the backend, on the OpenSync libraries. These are also new on the distribution, and they're working hand-in-hand with the KitchenSync tool now. And this is really, really nice. So for the first time, I could sync my mobile phone.
And what kind of mobile phone do you have?
I have a Nokia whatever.
A Nokia whatever, okay.
Yeah.
And what about other devices like Palm-based devices? Do those sync okay?
It's also included. It's also SyncML is included, and SyncCE is for Windows PDAs. Is everything included? But I've never tried it so far, so don't name me on this.
I haven't heard you mention the B word yet. BlackBerry?
Oh, BlackBerry, I'm not sure.
Okay, and one other thing, you've seen my monster laptop that's all custom painted and everything. One of the big disappointments for me when I first got that thing going and everything lit up really well last March or so during one of the service packs for SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop. But still, I have the Secure Digital or SD card reader in there, and it does not work. Now, I haven't installed OpenSUSE on there yet. Do you have any news for me?
Works.
It works?
Should work.
Really?
Yeah, it works very fine. I have two laptops with SD card readers, and it works on both very fine. It really depends on the chipset, so we cannot guarantee it will work. But we cover about 70-80% of all integrated chip card readers, so it should be working, yeah.
That's great news. That's really nice to know that that's coming along. Now,
and of course, it's totally integrated into the system. If you insert an SD card, for example, the window will pop up. What do you want to do with the card, open a new window or whatever. So it's very nice. It's integrated in the system.
Okay, so like other things that were integrated through Project Utopia, now you plug in, your USB card or whatever, it opens up the correct, like, Conker or whatever. That's going to happen with this as well?
Yeah, but SD card is usually a storage media, so you just open a new window.
Right. Okay, cool. And then one other thing I want to find out before we get off of new features here, and that is I've got this audio guy that works with me. And he will not use any other machine but a Macintosh. He's okay by using Linux on it. It's not Mac OS he's completely dedicated to, but he loves his Mac hardware and usually his Mac OS. But if he wants to install OpenSUSE, can he do it on his Intel-based laptop?
Okay. Yeah, you can install it, but to be honest, you have maybe to change one or two configuration things. But compared to the old version of 10.1, it's totally different. We support the bootloader, the partition scheme, and stuff like this. So it's much, much easier. You don't have to read 10 pages of documentation. So just a short overview page where you can see what to change. It's not really available, the page now, but I will try to make it online as soon as possible.
What should somebody search for if they go onto the wiki if they want to find out how to set that up?
Just search for Mac.
All right, so that gives a really cool overview of some of the stuff that's in there. But what's next? Is there going to be a 10.3?
Yes, of course. So we're working for 10.3. Should be midsummer next year. I guess it's August. It really depends on how much work we have on other products, but the plan is 8 months.
You guys just got 10.2 out the door, and I'm sorry to already put pressure on you, but what's coming? What are you guys working on? What's the focus?
This is a good question. It's really hard to say at this point of time. As you said, we really got the new product out, and now we start thinking about new things. We're working very closely with the community together. And it worked out very well for 10.2, for example. So the community had many feature requests, and we tried to integrate them in 10.2, and I guess we will continue this kind of working style for 10.3. So we make the distribution for the community, and the community worked very closely with us. So this is very important for us, that we really make a distribution for the community and not for us.
Okay, so if that's the case, then I'm going to hold you to that. Here's my question. How can somebody who is passionate about Linux and passionate about OpenSUSE, how can they get involved with you? How can they find out about the release planning and that kind of stuff so that they can have influence on this and maybe help out? What are the pathways for somebody to get involved?
Pretty easy. Just go to the wiki, opensuse.org. Everything is explained there. We have a roadmap there for the next releases and stuff like that. And the most important thing, I guess, that you subscribe to the mailing list is called OpenSUSE-Project. So everything regarding the project, what's going on, what are the new features and stuff like this, are going to this mailing list. If you're more a technical guy, we have also some build service lists. We have a factory list. Factory is a bleeding edge distribution we have. So we have pretty much stuff to offer, and you can talk directly with the maintainers, programmers of the distribution. So also for the build service, for example, if you want to use the build service, which is pretty nice and pretty easy, just subscribe to the mailing list and ask how, and we will help out.
And do you guys do any kind of online meetings at all, like live planning meetings ever?
Yeah, we have bi-weekly meeting. It's every 2 weeks. And we talk about a lot of stuff. And also in the wiki, when you just search for meetings, you will see an overview. What is the next meeting? What was discussed in the last meeting? We have, of course, a log file from the IRC meeting, and so you can also see what's going on in the OpenSUSE project at all.
Very cool. So it sounds like if somebody just goes to the wiki, they can find out all these different things that you talk about. It's just a matter of getting on there and looking for getting involved.
Right.
All right, good. Well, Martin, thank you very much once again for yet another interview about yet another SUSE Linux release, and this time
OpenSUSE.
And this time, I promise, we will not call you Michael Loeffler before we do the interview, and we will introduce you as Martin Lesage on this particular interview.
Nice.
All right. Thanks very much, Martin. We appreciate your time.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. And that's it for our interview with Martin Lesage about OpenSUSE version 10.2. And we're already eager for 10.3 to come up now. In the meantime, of course, you can go to our website and download OpenSUSE 10.2. We have a link on it for this show in its show notes, and just click right on that and it'll take you to a page with all your different options for downloading it. If you want to get more involved in the OpenSUSE community, Martin Lesage and the team invite you to do so. These are a great group of people, very active people, very passionate about what they're doing, and we invite you to get involved if you'd like to. In the meantime, on our website, Novell.com/openaudio. You can rate this episode with 1 to 5 stars, or you can leave a comment. We love getting comments from our listeners, and it keeps us going. It gives us new ideas of what else. You can also see what upcoming interviews are going to be coming along by looking at the upcoming shows, and we post there whatever we're going to be interviewing on next. For instance, we've got a data center interview coming up, and we've got one on the Open Enterprise Server client issues as well. And we'll also look at the Vista client there for NetWare or for Open Enterprise Server. Meanwhile, I remind you that Novell Open Audio was brought to you by your friends at Novell Users International in conjunction with Novell Incorporated. All of our content is driven by our listening community, who give us a lot of different feedback about what they want to hear on the show. That's it for this time. We'll see you next time.